Hey everyone, and welcome back to Can't Stop Learning. On today's episode, I'm joined by Jess Stidham, a yoga and meditation instructor and owner of Wild Sage Yoga. After tossing around the idea of an episode on toxic positivity, Jess and I connected, and I'm so happy that we did. I wanted to introduce the concept of toxic positivity in a way that people could really relate to. And what better way to do that than have a conversation with someone who focuses on mindfulness for a living?
I think sometimes when we think about yoga, we just think about all the bendy, pretzel-y things that, and that's certainly part of it, but there's so much more. And that's the part that I really love and that I really enjoy sharing with other people.
We also wanted to dive into the sister problem of toxic positivity, which is toxic productivity. In a nutshell, these terms identify those times in our life where we feel driven to act happy and grateful and constantly keep busy because if we don't, what will other people think?
I was trying to portray this feeling that I was okay or that everything was running smoothly when behind the scenes, like there was some stuff on fire. and so it just got really hard to kind of stay in that environment. And so that was like when the curtain got lifted. I was like, man, everybody is going around pretending. And that's not what's really happening, not just for me, but for everyone.
We also tackle something that I think we've seen happening a lot over the last few years. Within the movement for self-care, there's a lot of people on social media hashtagging self-care. But how many of those people are truly demonstrating what it's like to give their body and their mind what they need?
You're thinking about other things, so then it's like you're just ticking that item off your list in the name of self-care instead of actually practicing it and letting your body relax.
This entire conversation fits perfectly into what Jess does every single day with her clients, and I really enjoyed getting the chance to talk with her and try to understand what these toxic patterns can look like in our lives, and how we can start to really take more meaningful time for ourselves. All right. Well, thanks, Jess, for coming on the podcast. It's so great to have you.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Really happy to be here.
So today you and I are going to talk through a couple of different things that we connected through a Facebook group, just kind of on this particular topic and wanted to bring it out to the world. Mainly the first one's going to be toxic positivity. And then we're going to talk through toxic productivity and kind of what those two things are and the differences between them. So let's start off with you just kind of telling the audience a little bit about yourself and kind of where, you know, where these terms sort of fell into your life and what you've learned about them so far.
Yeah. So my name is Jessica Stidham. I am a yoga and meditation instructor. I have several different certifications. I have my 200 hour, I have a prenatal certification and also a mindfulness and meditation certification, as well as some additional training from like yin yoga, restorative. So I'm super involved and really excited about the educational pieces behind yoga. Like it really fits in with your podcast. Like I can't stop learning about it, you know? Mm-hmm. Really my goal behind teaching yoga in this way is that I want to talk about yoga beyond the poses, because mm-hmm. I think sometimes when we think about yoga, we just think about all the bendy, pretzel-y things that, and that's certainly part of it, but there's so much more. And that's the part that I really love and that I really enjoy sharing with other people. So kind of, you know, just through living life, these concepts of toxic positivity and productivity, I didn't necessarily know the terms per se, but I kind of fell into those traps. I was always like trying to portray that good vibes only, or, you know, yeah. Add that extra thing to my to-do list. And I got to a place of extreme burnout and I was like, okay, there has to be something, you know, something behind this. And yoga really helped me to make that connection.
That's great. For those folks who are listening who may not know the definition of some of these terms, the definition of toxic positivity is the belief that no matter how dire or difficult a situation might be, you should always have a positive attitude. And like you just said, it's sort of that good vibes only concept that we see sort of floating around. And you and I connected on this in particular only because we've seen it kind of on the wider scale, but also in our personal lives, whether we're doing it to ourselves or it's kind of being inflicted upon us by other people. So I want to just kind of let you talk about that a little bit, specifically on toxic positivity and maybe how that's manifested in your life, either from other people or towards yourself, or let's kind of focus on that piece first.
Yeah, definitely. So I think for me, toxic positivity was, like I said, it was something that I didn't really quite understand, but that was all around me all the time anyway. And it sort of stems from this idea that, like, we almost don't want to process our own emotions. And so therefore it's really hard to watch other people process their emotions. And so we kind of then tend to go through life just saying, oh, it'll be fine, or at least you have this, you know, that kind of mentality. And it just, it kind of manifested into this overwhelming feeling of like, I can't get my shit together. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I was trying to portray this feeling that I was okay, or that everything was running smoothly, when behind the scenes, like, there was some stuff on fire. Mm-hmm. And so it just got really hard to kind of stay in that environment. And I really had to sit down and start to think about, okay, well, what am I avoiding? What am I not working through? What sensations in my body are like screaming at me to do something about this? And so that was like when the curtain got lifted. I was like, man, everybody is going around pretending, and that's not what's really happening, not just for me, but for everyone.
Right. And it's so ingrained in our culture. I mean, there's books all surrounding this, especially on females, I think, like on women in general, just this idea that you have to always be happy and be grateful for everything and not really dive into any of those quote unquote negative emotions. And you just have to, you know, again, be grateful for everything that you have instead of dwelling on the stuff that you are, you know, upset about or whatever it is. And that's just not a way to live life. I don't think you don't get to feel all of the things. Like there's a wonderful psychologist named Dr. Susan David, who talks a lot about toxic positivity. And she says, you know, we live in this culture now where you're not allowed to feel your feelings. You're supposed to just kind of bury them deep within, and instead of sort of exploring them and seeing what they mean for you. And, you know, I think we know from our wider culture that feelings are not exactly everyone's favorite topic, but they're becoming more able to talk about. People are able to kind of dive into that and say, well, maybe I'm not just sad. I'm, you know, I'm lonely, or I'm depressed, or like, you know, we're becoming better. I think maybe our generation is a little bit better just sort of identifying what those emotions are instead of just casting them off as something that we're not allowed to have. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something that I've seen. And I know you and I chatted about this, but the one of the key examples of toxic positivity, at least in modern literature, is the book Girl, Wash Your Face. I was sent this book, you know, just the name of it and the photos of it, by multiple women in my life of, you got to read this book, girl, blah, 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 you can do anything you want. And at the first, I'm like, oh, thanks. Like, they're thinking of me and, you know, they think I'm positive and blah, blah, blah. And then you really get to the meat of what books like that and a lot of these materials are about. And it's, you know, to be fair, you know, for anybody who's freaking out right now, I haven't actually read the book. I got about 2 pages in and threw it away. So, sent it back to the library.
It's further than me. I have read 0 pages. So,
but that's really what the key focus of books like that is that, you know, it does have this positive message of you can get through anything, but it's this talk. The reason it's toxic is because it's not acknowledging those emotions and letting them drive your personality and drive your passions in your life, and having deep conversations with people about their emotions and not just, as Brené Brown would say, sort of off-ramping people who try to reach out to you when they're in a negative state or whatever it is. So yeah, the examples that exist sort of in pop culture, it's hard to wrap your head around because you don't want to negate positivity, but then it gets to a point where it's just too much.
Definitely. And I think it helps us to bypass our emotions in a really healthy way. It's not almost, it really does. And that's not to say, like you said, we can never be happy. There are tons of good things in this world that we should celebrate, but it doesn't mean that we should be overlooking all of these other things, because to experience emotion is to be human. And a big thing in yoga is allowing those emotions to move through the body. So it's one thing if we develop this narrative, I guess, so to speak, for why we're experiencing these emotions, like, oh, you know, because of this as a child, I do this as an adult. And yeah, that makes absolute sense. But have you allowed that to process? And, you know, unfortunately, I love yoga culture, but that is such a huge thing. And I think it can almost be a deterrent for folks to try a practice like yoga, because we kind of have this vision of like the guru on a rock and good vibes only and everything's peaceful and, or the yogi that can contort themselves into all these different shapes. But like the real meat and potatoes of yoga is allowing yourself to get connected to all those different things, not just the positive stuff, but everything else that's going on too. And that's why I really love the practice.
Absolutely. And I think for some people, it's harder to understand what toxic positivity is until they sort of hear some real life examples of it. So I want to talk through one experience that I had recently. At the surface level, it doesn't seem like that. But when I really started to think about it, you know, after the fact, I was like, wow, you know, this is a real concrete example in my life. So my dog got a cancer diagnosis at the end of last year. And it was, you know, when your dog's your child, it's the hardest thing you can possibly go through. But what I experienced sort of after that news became public was this overwhelming response from like family and friends of just like, just be positive, you know, she's the loaf, she's gonna make it through, it's gonna be fine, because you know the prognosis was all over the place of, you know, how long she had. And as much as I appreciated like the support, that was a lot of other people kind of off ramping my emotions. They couldn't hold my pain, so they're natural instinct is to sort of say, well, everything's going to be okay. Kind of like we said at the beginning, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Whereas, what I was doing internally the entire time was actually living through a lot of those like sad, devastated emotions and not being okay with them, but just sort of navigating them a little bit more. And I think instead of just pretending that nothing was wrong, I just let myself be sad. And I knocked off some of my responsibilities so I could be focused on time with her. You know, every day was a gift. You know, I knew that at any point she may not wake up. Like all of these things I was so focused on that. Whereas, you know, the universe around me was sort of saying, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Like she's going to be great. And then, you know, shortly after that, she passed away. And I think a few of my friends came to me after and said, I did not think that was going to happen. You know, that was not what I was expecting. And it wasn't the time for me to have a conversation about toxic positivity. But, you know, 6 months later, I'm evaluating that experience a little bit more and how I react to other people going through pain, you know, instead of just dismissing it as it's going to be fine, don't worry about it. I really try to sit with people and try to understand what the exact emotions are that they're going through and just sort of listen. Don't try to fix it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people just try to fix it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that stems from a place of where, you know, we don't know how to hold space for ourselves, let alone for someone else. So if we're not even comfortable enough to do that for us, then how in the world can we apply that same empathy or that same response to someone else, you know? And I have two dogs myself. So, and I dread the day that we might find something like that. So I wholeheartedly feel for you. And they've been my children for a long time, so I get it. but yeah, it's so difficult to kind of understand where that perspective comes from if we're not even honoring that space for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it does come from this concept I hear a lot, just in like kind of modern, more modern psychology, the Brené Browns and Dr. Davids and that type of thing. It's just building up empathy, you know, sort of flexing that empathy muscle and being able to hold other people's pain without immediately trying to fix everything for other people. And I think in a way, practicing that with other people gives us a little bit of more permission to do it with ourselves as well. And not thinking about your emotions as all positive or negative, you know, and positive or great, negative or ignore them. It's really about, it's just an emotion. And we are lucky to be a being on the earth that has the capacity to have them, I think, personally. Yeah. So explore it, see where it takes you. Usually it's coming from somewhere, it's coming from a need. So just like diving in head first and sitting in an uncomfortable space and not trying to fix yourself and not trying to fix other people has, it's becoming more of the conversation now, which I really like, because I think it just gives people a little bit more permission to be themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And I kind of try to wiggle this in when I teach yoga too. And so one thing that I really like to do at the start of every class is ask people to breathe normally and just mm-hmm. notice like where they're feeling tight, how the quality of their breath is, but not assigning a good or bad label to it, just observing how it is, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that's so simple, but I don't think we even pay attention to that surface level breath, like how we're breathing on a daily basis, let alone like if we were to take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. But that simple statement of like, don't attach anything to it, just notice what you notice. It like a light bulb goes off for folks that haven't done this before, because they're like, oh my gosh, I can just be in this space and not worry about whether or not I'm doing something wrong or right. Like I can just be here and experience it. And it's such a powerful realization when you get to that point. So I would encourage you, if you're listening to this, just notice your breath, see if you can sit with it. Don't assign anything, you know, and see what that brings up. You know, can we just exist without attaching it to this toxic positivity or negativity or whatever, right. To see how it feels.
Yeah. It's interesting, because I think even over the course of the last year, with everything the world has gone through, collectively, our ability to be with ourselves has been on a journey, I think, because mm-hmm. we've had to do so much. You know, a lot of people spent time in actual solo isolation. And that brings up a lot of questions about what is my, you know, things like you said, what does my breathing mean? What do these emotions mean? And, you know, mental health definitely took a toll throughout the pandemic, as it had been kind of building up for years and kind of this anxiety ridden culture we have. But it is nice to see this. We're identifying the problem, which is mm-hmm. that we have emotions. We're not always going to be okay. Not everything in life is great. Even if you are blessed with so many things and appreciate all of those things, you are still allowed to feel sad or to feel mad or, you know, all of these different, you know, again, the quote unquote negative emotions. You can still feel these things and honor those emotions inside of you and still be happy and healthy and navigating those emotions. And it is, I do think that I've done yoga a few times, you know, meditation is huge, and just letting yourself experience something like that and a class like that or a practice like that, it can take you a long way down that journey of just learning to be with yourself.
Yeah. And I really like what you said about not having it be a negative emotion, like mad or anything, because if you think about it, if you're mad about something, it's important to you. Like there's a reason behind that. And so if you can sit with it and say, oh, I'm feeling this way because I'm so passionate about this, and this is so important to me, and I really care about this. Like if you can reframe it, it's not a negative emotion. It's just another one on the spectrum, you know? So it's a really beautiful way to kind of sit with those and see, okay, how does this manifest in my everyday life, and what does it actually mean?
Exactly. So I'm going to transition us here, just because I think what we've seen kind of in more recent studies and just conversations I've had with folks like you is just that this theme of toxic positivity can manifests in a lot of other ways. And that's the second topic we want to talk about, is toxic productivity and sort of what that means in American culture, or just, you know, just culture these days of never sitting still. And this was kind of the first thing that you and I connected on. And obviously it kind of goes against everything that yoga stands for. So let's kind of jump into that. And maybe you can give everybody kind of your definition of toxic productivity.
Yeah. So for me, the way that I approach it is, toxic productivity is where we get to a point where we feel like we have to add that extra thing to our to-do list, no matter what. Like, if we're not doing things, we're not good enough. We haven't earned our rest, which is a whole rant that I can get on if you really want me to. We feel guilty when we're taking that time for ourselves. So it's kind of become this normal thing in our society, or a really common thing, I should say, to just be busy all the time. And that busyness kind of layers over the top of us being able to connect to ourselves and connect to our body. And so that's kind of where yoga comes in, because we can peel back that layer and say, well, do you actually need that extra thing on your to-do list? Or are you just covering up something that you might be uncomfortable sitting with? Right. And so that's kind of where that plays in for me. And I, on a personal note, I've fallen victim to that many a time, just because it's almost a standard in our society, right? Like, if you're not busy, you're lazy and unproductive and all these, you know, negative things. And so there's been a lot of times where I felt, you know, guilted into taking on that additional responsibility, because if not, then I haven't earned this hour for myself over the weekend. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've experienced something similar, but that's where it really plays out for me.
Oh yeah. I mean, I feel like it was a blessing and a curse that, you know, particularly my generation of parents was the, you can do anything generation, which is so wonderful and beautiful and supportive, but it's also like, whoa, that's a lot of pressure. It's like, I can do anything. So I think a lot of us transition that into, I have to do everything. You know, if you're not doing everything, then what's wrong with you? And rather than appreciating that different people have different skills and are good at different things, we're sort of expecting everyone to cook and travel and have a family and have a marriage, or, you know, there's all of these different things that sort of contribute to this like grind or hustle culture that exists out there, where it almost seems like success is unattainable unless you're working till 4 a.m. every day. Or, you know, it's so interesting. I've definitely personally experienced it just in when I first started working in corporate America. You know, like, different companies have had different standards, but for the most part, working in media, you're expected to be on all the time. And I was working in New York for a year and a half, and I think every time I was there, I was in the office till like 6 or 7 at night. And I was leaving early compared to some of the people. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's like you said, it's this expectation of being busy. And if we're not busy, then what the hell are we doing with yourself? You know, what are you doing? And that comes at the expense of self-care and relaxation and real rest. And that's the saddest part about it, is we get so caught up in all of these different things that time just flies by, and then all of a sudden we're burnt out or we're exhausted.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that's really interesting about that too is that when it comes to practices like self-care, we add that to the to-do list, right? It's exactly. Not even like a natural thing that happens. It's like, oh, at 6 p.m. I have my pedicure, or at 8 p.m. I'm going to take that bubble bath, you know, or after the kids are in bed, whatever the case may be. And when you do those things, you find yourself answering that work email, or maybe you're mentally going through that to-do list, or you're thinking about other things. So then it's like, you're just taking that item off your list in the name of self-care, instead of actually practicing it and letting your body relax. And I've found that really interesting, especially amid the pandemic. And I think you brought this up last time we talked, but feeling like, especially at the beginning, a lot of people were saying, well, if you don't come out with the pandemic with an extra skill, you're doing it wrong, you know? And it's like, well, maybe we actually just need to take a step back and rest. Maybe that's the purpose, you know?
And it wasn't like we were on some commutative vacation. Like we were in a pandemic and people were getting sick and were dying. Like it was not like everybody had the day off. So there was a lot of expectation, you're right, that got put on so many people to learn how to make bread and to cut their own hair and to like do all of these things that are kind of part of our natural life cycle that we rely on other people to do. And we were relying more on ourselves, but it almost became, I don't think I'm coining this term, but I'm going to call it like performative self-care, where if you were baking bread, you were posting it online because what else were you going to do? You're going to show everyone your new skill that you acquired over the pandemic. And that's just crazy because you're not, at the end of the day, like you said, you're not having the bubble bath to really relax your body and feel the soap and smell the smells, like do the things that like a bubble bath can do for people. You were doing it to tell everybody that you were taking a bubble bath and hashtag self-care. Like that's just, there was so much of that. And it was hard to navigate, I think, because on the one hand, I loved that people were taking time to do those things for themselves. But on the other hand, if you're doing it just to talk about it on social media or whatever, it's not really self-care. It's just, you know, trying to be some sort of, it's performative. It's not genuine. And that's a shame, because that's when you miss out on the real time to like be with yourself and navigate a lot of the emotions that we were all feeling. And especially the transition to so many people working from home. I know plenty of people I talk to are like, yeah, I've been working till like 10 at night and getting up and rolling over and opening my laptop and just not nonstop working. And that sort of became the norm. You were expected to be on all the time. Even if your kids were in the background, you were still expected to be on all the time. And we didn't really give people the space to sort of navigate what it all meant.
Oh yeah. And even just last night, my husband and I were watching a show and I was getting work emails all the way until like 11:30. And I turned to him and I was like, what am I expected to respond to this? You know, because in my mind, it was a no, it was a hard no. But it almost helped me in kind of a roundabout accidental way, to help me set my better boundaries for myself. Because in the past, I might have responded to that email at 11:30 at night.
Right.
But now I'm like, you know what? I can wait until 8:15 when I'm quote unquote scheduled to start working, you know? And so it kind of helped me to advocate for myself in a way. And I'm hopeful that that's a hard lesson learned for a lot of us, you know, especially for those of us that are working at home, to help to create those boundaries, because then the actual practice of self-care can actually happen.
Yeah. And hopefully there's more flexibility in the way forward of just sort of announcing those things and, you know, setting those boundaries, whether it's with work or even with family. That's going to be a huge one for a lot of people, as they had a little bit of relief from a lot of like familial obligation throughout the pandemic. And now I know a lot of people I've been talking to I live in Bozeman, where all of our families basically live somewhere else, my whole group of friends. And it's like, how do you navigate what that relationship looks like going forward? Because you weren't allowed to see them for a year, but you know, there was some good and bad that came with that. So how do you navigate that going forward is a conversation we're constantly having now going into, you know, back to quote unquote normal. So it's super interesting to see how different this whole productivity within a pandemic life happened. And for some people, maybe giving them the chance going forward to see how much toxic productivity was playing a role in their life, because maybe they finally did get a break. They don't have to do all the things. We don't have to do all the things. And that's a lesson that we all sort of have to learn, because the minute you sort of create that space for yourself, you do actually have time for self-care. And, you know, and it's as simple as just like putting your phone away for a few hours and just like laying on the couch or like petting your animals or whatever it is. Just all of these, you know, quote unquote, like unproductive time is actually exactly what you need.
Yeah, exactly. And the cool thing about yoga too is that when we're actually taking the time to, you know, even if it's 5 minutes, it doesn't have to be a full 60 minute or 90 minute practice. But once we start incorporating that into our life, it becomes so much easier to recognize the signals from the body that are like, hey, I need rest. We need to chill for a little while. And then once you have a good idea of what those sensations look like in your body, like for me, for example, one of the ways that this toxic productivity manifested in my life physically was I got really bad TMJ. So I had really bad jaw pain. And so now that's like my red warning light that flashes. Like if my jaw starts to get tense, I'm like, okay, I need to take a step back from this. I need to sit with myself a little bit, see what I need. But once you start to recognize those symbols, you know, for some people it's shoulder tension, it might be you clench your fist, whatever the case is. Then you get so much better at saying, okay, I need to take some space for me. You get to set that boundary. And I can visualize your listeners rolling their eyes, but you can't pour from an empty cup, right? That's such a cliche thing to say. But you can better help others once you are better taken care of for yourself. And so yoga is really cool in that it helps us to figure out, okay, what does my body actually crave right now? What do we actually need? Am I energized? Am I ready to go and do all the things? Or am I just mentally saying that to myself because it's habitual at this point? And do I actually need to rest?
Yeah. So I was interested in some of those body signals that you were talking about just a second ago. So you mentioned kind of your jaw pain that you've had, the shoulder pain, people kind of clenching their fists. Can you talk through any, maybe some other examples that either you or your folks in your practice have experienced just around kind of one of those, what those signals are. So maybe they might be able to identify them.
Yeah, definitely. That's just kind of a physical representation, right? So it can also be that feeling of anxiety that some people get in their chest or that knot in your stomach. It could be a headache, right? Like a tension headache. Or it could be more on the emotional side. It could be when you feel, you know, you've got 10 things to do today on your list and then someone calls you and it's your mom. And she got a flat tire and she needs you to come pick her up. And you're just like, flip the table. I'm done with today. You know what I mean? And it's just that overwhelming. Like if I have to make one more decision or do one more thing, I'm going to scream. Like that is also a really good signal. And it doesn't have to be that dramatic, of course.
Right.
You know, you could walk past the sink and see the sponge on the counter. Like, oh, who didn't put this away? It could be something as simple as that. But when you notice yourself getting aggravated or frustrated at some of these more commonplace things, then that's usually a red flag that you're approaching this place of you really need to take some time for yourself. So when we practice yoga, you know, like I was talking about earlier, paying attention to your breath, just starting there. Does the breath feel tight in your chest or does it feel really free flowing? Are you breathing only in your chest or can you push the breath down into your belly? Can you expand through the breath? So when you start to notice those things, if we're breathing really shallow, just up in our chest, probably we're a little anxious or stressed or just really overwhelmed. But if we can get that breath down into our belly, if we can work it down into different places in our body, it's like all of a sudden the shoulders start to relax. The space between your eyebrows starts to relax. It's like, oh, I didn't even know I needed that, you know? So there's a lot of ways that the body talks to us to communicate like, hey, there's something going on, but we tend to pile on some tasks that help us to ignore that. And that's where we get to this point of like burnout or just really stressed out.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. And even earlier today, I was feeling sort of overwhelmed, I think towards the end of the week with like all the work stuff going on and maybe anticipation of the weekend. I always feel sort of overwhelmed because with the weekends, that's where I really, really fall into toxic productivity for me, because, you know, you spend so much time at work all week. You're like, I want to fit everything into this weekend and I want to go hiking and I want to go see my friends. I want to go get a drink. I want to do all these things. And I was feeling pretty like you know, anxiety ridden my chest earlier today, and I'm watching my smartwatch to see what my heart rate is. I'm like, wow, my heart rate must be through the roof, and it's not. It's all psychological. It's all my body, not even on the watch, but the rest of my body is saying, hey, you're going too fast. You need to slow down. And, mm-hmm. you know, recognizing those signals saying, you know what, instead of working on this project for 10 minutes, I'm just going to go like lay down and breathe and try to like, you know, center back with myself and not put so much pressure on whatever's coming next or anything like that. So I think it's really good. And a lot of what you were talking about are things that people can do outside of a yoga studio. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's nice to have the help. And your voice is so calming. I can imagine your classes being very calming. But a lot of those things, that belly breathing, those, you know, releasing tension in your shoulders, uncrossing your legs, it's like loosening up your face a little bit, maybe taking your hair out if it's tied up really tight, or just noticing a lot of those cues of like your body being really tense. Even one of the littlest ones I had a friend mention to me once was if you're pushing your tongue to the roof of your mouth all the time, if you take a second to be like, take the tongue off the roof of your mouth, put your shoulders down and uncross your legs, your whole body just changes. And that's all stuff you can do outside of a studio.
100%. And I think that is one of those common misconceptions about the practice of yoga too, is that you have to go to a studio and you have to dedicate 60 minutes to it or something like that, you know, but really yoga can exist anywhere. Like I can do yoga sitting in this chair talking to you just by being mindful of what I'm doing. And it's such a cool thing when you start to make that connection that you have ripple effects through your life. Because you become so much better at identifying those signals.
Right. And it's so important for us as we sort of move forward into whatever this next phase is for everyone to have that time for ourselves and be able to recognize either those body signals or just examples in your life of toxically positive people, or this notion in your head that you need to be doing all the things all the time, and really start to prioritize like your happiness and your, you know, Dr. David has this term called emotional agility, which is basically your capacity to be able to handle all the emotions that come to you throughout your life. And knowing that it's okay that you're having them, that you don't need to push them aside, because the more you push them down, the more you pretend that they don't exist, they will rupture and manifest, and you'll burn out, or, you know, there's so many different side effects. So my hope is that, you know, by being able to identify some of these topics and these concepts that exist now, people can say, wow, you know, I have a friend who does that a lot, or I do that to myself. You know, I say, you know, I don't let myself be sad because I have all these things to be grateful for. And, you know, it's being able to recognize that stuff a little bit more as we go forward is going to be super important, just as, you know, a lot of the common phrases you're hearing right now is a sort of great reset as we move back into life and whatever that means for everybody, being more accepting of things like these concepts, toxic positivity and toxic productivity, and how they can affect our lives is going to be super, super important.
Oh, 100%. And I, you know, you talked earlier a little bit about that performative self-care. Mm-hmm. And for me, I guess I kind of see it as more self-prioritization versus that performative self-care, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this big distinction. And I think that has a lot to do with the emotional capacity that you're talking about now, because if we're assigning some kind of self-care in a way that isn't as meaningful, then we're not allowing that emotional capacity to build or to be experienced at all, really. You know, we're doing it for whatever, the clout, or just to check it off the to-do list. But if we can prioritize ourselves, if we can be bold enough to actually sit down and make that connection, then it's gonna be huge. And like you said, I really hope that your listeners, just like little nugget takeaway, you know, can you sit with yourself for 30 seconds? You know, start there. It doesn't have to be this grand gesture. It doesn't have to be done in 10 minutes. You know, you can take a year to get to that place if you need to, but just start to think about how that can play out in your life and the connection that you can make as a result.
That's wonderful. I can't think of a better way to end this. So you hit perfectly everything that I was hoping we would cover. So I do want my listeners to be able to sort of get in touch with you if they can. So you want to say a little bit? I'll put your stuff kind of in the informational section of the podcast episode, but tell us a little bit about where we can find you.
Yeah, so my business is called Wild Sage Yoga and Wellness. So you can find me, my website is wildsageyogaandwellness.com or on Instagram at Wild Sage Yoga or on Facebook at at.wildsageyoga. And I would love to connect with you in any way, shape, or form. I hold different virtual classes. I hold in-person classes on occasion. And I also have an online studio, Wild Yogi Studio. And that houses kind of like a Netflix library, for lack of a better word, of all of my video classes. And I upload a new one every single Sunday. So if you're interested in participating in that, you can take an individual class or you could join the membership and stick around full time. So I really hope to see you guys there.
That's great. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. This was super enlightening. I'm definitely going to try one of your classes, but just thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
I can't thank Jess enough for joining me on the show. Her insights and advice can be a really huge help to everyone who wants to start breaking these cycles of toxic positivity and toxic productivity. This conversation was the perfect segue for me to make an announcement. After taking a long hiatus from the show after my last episode, I took some of that time to really map out what was important to me and where all my energy was going. I have loved every part of making this podcast and sharing conversations with old and new friends about topics they're passionate about. I have a few episodes left of season 2 that I'll be sharing, but after those air, I'll be sunsetting the show to shift my focus into some other projects that I'm really excited about. Thanks as always for being on this ride with me. I'm excited to share what I've got coming up soon and cap off this little passion project with some really new and exciting things for you to learn. Talk to you soon.